Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Commissioner Clark. Seated to my left is Commissioner LaVar. And this is the time and place which we've noticed for a hearing in docket number 14035140, which addresses electric service schedule number 38, qualifying facilities procedures and other related issues, including the capacity contribution study for wind and solar resources that originated from requirements expressed in docket number 12035100 and our orders associated with that docket. As I understand it, today we're going to address a settlement agreement that's been filed by the parties in this docket, or at least a number of the parties, and that the settlement agreement addresses the issues regarding Schedule 38 and the avoided cost input changes report of the company, but not the capacity contribution study for wind and solar resources. And the issues related to the latter will be addressed in accordance with our scheduling order that was issued in January of this year, which calls for hearings on, I believe it's June 18th. June 18th and 19th, beginning at 9 a.m. on June 18th. Does everyone agree with our purpose this morning as I've described it?
Yes.
Any questions about that? Then let's begin with appearances of counsel, and if you have a witness to support the settlement agreement, please introduce your witness as well, and we'll begin with the company. Ms. Hogle.
Good morning, Commissioners. Good morning, parties. Yvonne Hogle here on behalf of Rocky Mountain Power. With me is Mr. Paul Clemens, Senior Marketer for Rocky Mountain Power, and he is here to support the settlement stipulation. With me also is Mr. Bob Langley, who is the State Manager for Utah State Regulatory Affairs. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm Justin Jetter, representing the Utah Division of Public Utilities, and with me is Division Witness Charles Peterson, who will speak in favor of settlement stipulation.
Thank you.
Rex Olson on behalf of the Office of Consumer Services, and with me is Bela Bostar, who will be speaking as witness for the office in favor of the stipulation.
Thank you.
Good morning. Sophie Hayes on behalf of Utah Clean Energy. Utah Clean Energy has no witness today, but supports the stipulation.
Thank you, Ms. Hayes.
Gary Dodge on behalf of Sun Edison, LLC. Dan Patry could be available by phone if needed, but we had anticipated he would not be, so we haven't arranged for him to testify unless the commissioner has questions.
Thank you. Our thought today was, swear all of the witnesses and allow them to address serially their positions on the settlement, and then take questions as a panel. Is there any objection to that process?
No objection.
Okay. And is there any anticipation of the need to refer to confidential material, or is there any confidential material that parties are concerned about at this time?
Not that the company's aware.
The office has none, Your Honor.
None from the division that I'm aware of.
Thank you. Let me just ask, do we have anyone on the phone?
We have no callers.
No callers. And the three witnesses, if you please just remain seated but raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you. So the witnesses have been sworn, and Ms. Hogan.
Thank you.
Good morning. Can you please state your name, address, and position for the record?
Yes, my name is Paul Harrison Clemens. I'm employed by Rocky Mountain Power as a senior power marketer. My business address is 201 South Main Street, Suite 2300, Salt Lake City, Utah, 84111.
And what is the purpose of your testimony today?
Today I will briefly review the history of events and the key elements of the stipulation entered into by the signing parties, which include, by my record, Rocky Mountain Power, the Utah Division of Public Utilities, Utah Office of Consumer Services, Utah Clean Energy, SunEdison LLC, and Scottech Solar North America. I will also reconfirm Rocky Mountain Power's support of the stipulation and the company's belief that the stipulation is in public interest.
And did you participate in the settlement stipulation discussions?
Yes, I did.
Can you please recount the key relevant events that led to the stipulation?
Certainly. I'll try to be brief in my recollection of the events. There were quite a few events, as we have multiple dockets that were involved leading up to this settlement. So I'll try to touch on the key points. First, on August 22, 2014, the company filed its quarterly compliance filing for avoided cost input changes, and that was for Q2 2014, and that was docket number 1403540. On September 22nd of 2014, the DPU and the Office of Consumer Services, Utah Clean Energy, and SunEdison all filed comments and requested that the commission hold a scheduling conference to discuss the process and schedule for docket number 1403540. The Commission issued a notice of status and scheduling conference for Thursday, November 6, 2014. The comments that were filed by those parties were wide-ranging and addressed multiple issues related to Schedule 38, QF contracting procedures, and other QF-related issues. Furthermore, on October 9, 2014, Rocky Mountain Power filed its compliance filing along with pre-filed testimony related to the company's capacity contribution study for wind and solar resources. That filing was made in compliance with the Commission's Phase 2 order in docket number 1203-5100. In that docket, the Commission directed the company to complete a capacity contribution study, which it did. Generally, the company requested in that filing that the Commission adopt the capacity contribution values derived from its study. And requested that the company replace those values, the interim values, with the company's proposed values. On October 14, 2015, the DPU filed a memorandum responding to the company's compliance filing and recommended that the commission open a new docket that combines the review of the capacity contribution study I mentioned with the issues raised by the parties in 1403540. The DPU stated that combining those would allow for a comprehensive review of all issues related to Schedule 38. And in response to that request, the Commission opened docket number 1403540. On November 7, 2014, this Commission issued a scheduling order setting a schedule for several technical conferences and the discovery guidelines. Parties indicated to the Commission that having several technical conferences at the beginning may narrow the scope of issues that were raised by the various parties. Various technical conferences were held. Two were held on December 2nd, one related to the capacity contribution study, another related to the QF pricing queue management and power purchase agreement milestones. A third technical conference was held on avoided cost modeling assumptions on January 6, 2015. And the Commission issued an amended scheduling order, our first amended scheduling order, on January 12, 2015. A second status and scheduling conference was held January 21, 2015, and a scheduling order and notice of technical conference on January 23, 2015. The parties have held a series of settlement discussions since that time. Beginning on February 23rd of 2015 and continuing through April 14th, 2015. And all interveners in the docket were invited to participate. to the extent they had intervened on the date which settlement discussions were held. The parties have reached agreement on most of the issues raised by the parties, with the exception of the capacity contribution study and the capacity contribution percentages that resulted from that study. The settlement, as the commissioner mentioned, the settlement and resolution of those issues will continue on the schedule that's set forth in that docket. However, this settlement resolves all issues related to the QF pricing queue management, QF power purchase agreement milestones, and the QF avoided cost modeling updates.
Can you please describe specifically the terms in the settlement stipulation?
Yes, I assume the commission and other interested parties have read the stipulation, so I will briefly address key elements without reading it verbatim. In doing so, I don't intend to modify the terms of the stipulation in any way, so if anything I say contradicts the stipulation, it's the stipulation, not my words, that would be binding. From a general standpoint, as set forth in paragraph 24 of the stipulation, this stipulation incorporates into Schedule 38 new terms and conditions related to the management of the QF indicative pricing queue and the QF indicative pricing and contract negotiation process, including the incorporation into the tariff of certain contract terms that are to be included in all QF PPAs. This settlement includes clarified procedures for updates to the avoided cost modeling assumptions used to calculate QF pricing. Those procedures are included in paragraphs 18 through 23 of the stipulation, but are not part of the Schedule 38 tariff. All of these changes to Schedule 38 are intended to improve the efficiency and the transparency of the process through which QFs receive indicative pricing and negotiate power purchase agreements with the company. And the company believes that these changes are beneficial to the QF and beneficial to the company as well, and overall increase the efficiency of the process. I'll first address briefly the timelines, as the primary changes to Schedule 38 involve adding specific timelines for various stages of the process. If the QF does not abide by the timelines, the QF project is removed from the pricing queue. These timelines were included in order to provide an avenue for QFs to conclude PPA negotiations and enter into an agreement with the company. However, if they are unable to do so and meet specific timelines, they are dropped from the pricing queue, thus making way for other projects who may desire to enter into an agreement. Certain timelines also apply to the company, although there are no specific recourses against the company if it does not meet its timelines, other than the timelines for the QF are extended if they're waiting for the company to meet its timelines. The tariff also contemplates that the timelines for the company may be modified by this commission upon request by the company and by order of the commission under extenuating circumstances, such as if the company receives an extraordinarily large amount of QF requests and may be unable to meet some of the timelines in a timely manner. The company would advise the commission and request relief from its obligations if that were to occur. I won't provide the timelines in detail, but they are well summarized in paragraph 5 of the preface of Schedule 38. They set forth the key dates and timelines. These timelines are generally in line with those that were either previously in Schedule 38 or those that have been historically used by the company, even though they were not specifically set forth in the tariff. The primary change is that this QF project must now explicitly progress in the contracting process, or the QF project will be removed from the pricing queue. And again, as I mentioned, the timelines also include additional requirements on the company throughout the PPA negotiation process. Another significant change to Schedule 38 includes requiring that indicative prices be updated unless a PPA is executed within 6 months after indicative pricing was first provided by the company. The previous tariff did not specifically address a timeline between providing of indicative pricing and execution of a PPA. Parties have agreed that inclusion of this timeline in the new tariff provides clarity and certainty to all parties on this issue and will facilitate negotiation and review of future QF PPAs. In general terms, the previous tariff allowed the company to update pricing at any time, and there was at times ambiguity between QS and the company related to how long an indicative price was valid. The changes that we have proposed to Schedule 38 make it clear that a PPA must be executed within 6 months of the date the indicative pricing was provided. If the PPA is not executed within that time frame, then the indicative pricing is no longer valid and will be updated. Other material changes of note in the revised Schedule 38 include the following. One, a QF must provide an interconnection queue number in order to obtain an indicative price. Previously, no queue number was required. The PPA must include the following standard terms. One, the scheduled commercial operation date must not be greater than 30 months after the execution of the power execution date of the power purchase agreement. So once you sign the power purchase agreement, you must have a scheduled online date that does not exceed 30 months from the date of execution. Previously, there was no such requirement, and you could sign a power purchase agreement with an online date that extended well into the future. Second PPA term is that the QF project must sign a system impact study agreement with PacifiCorp Transmission within 120 days of the date of a commission order approving the agreement, or the date that order becomes final and non-appealable. This requirement ensures that the qualifying facility project is progressing adequately in the transmission interconnection process. One issue that we have had in the past is that QF projects execute power purchase agreement with a certain online date, and then as they progress in the interconnection process, it becomes clear that they will be unable to achieve that online date due to their interconnection timeline. This ensures that the project will be able to be interconnected and energized in a manner, in a timely manner, and in a time that meets the contract obligations. The third requirement is that the QF project must provide 100% of the project development security within 30 days of the date of a commission order approving the PPA and 30 days of the date that that order is final, non-appealable. This ensures that the QF project provides adequate security close to the execution of the power purchase agreement. While these terms are similar terms, have historically been included in QF PPAs, they had to be negotiated in each individual contract and are slightly different from QF to QF. Including them in the tariff provides greater clarity and certainty for both proposed QFs and the company. I'd also like to take a moment to address the avoid cost modeling assumptions. This was a separate track in the docket, and paragraphs 18 through 23 of the stipulation address these items. These items relate to avoid cost modeling assumptions and how those assumptions are updated and changed over time. As I mentioned earlier, these items are included in the stipulation, but are not in Schedule 38 itself. I'll briefly address those. First, the company believes that these settlement terms related to the avoided cost modeling updates will enhance clarity of the company's quarterly compliance filings by clearly identifying modeling assumptions and changes made each quarter. The modeling updates will be differentiated by routine and non-routine updates. Routine updates are essentially the maintenance of basic modeling inputs and data. They include items such as the forward price curve, any new signed contracts or contracts that have been terminated, and updating the load forecast. So basic routine maintenance of assumptions. And then when an IRP is filed by the company, the preferred portfolio of resources will be updated as well as part of a routine update. Routine updates will be incorporated into avoided cost pricings as needed and used immediately to calculate pricing for potential QFs. Non-routine updates are items such as changes in the avoided cost calculation methods or departures from commission-approved modeling techniques. Non-routine updates will not be incorporated into avoided cost prices until they have been either identified in quarterly compliance filings, or the update was unchallenged for a period of 3 weeks after filing the compliance report, or a challenged update has been resolved by commission action. So in short, routine updates such as the forward price curve, signed contracts, load forecasts will be made immediately. Anything that's non-routine will either have to be unchallenged for a period of 3 weeks, or if it's challenged, it'll have to be resolved by the commission. And the parties agree that these modeling assumption parameters provide a fair balance between incorporating most up-to-date information at the time prices are calculated and transparency into the modeling inputs. Moving on to transitional procedures, as we are making significant changes to the tariff in terms of what is required of a QF before it's dropped from the queue, paragraph 25 addresses the steps the company will undertake to notify QFs of this revised Schedule 38 approved by the commission. Upon commission approval of the stipulation and the revised Schedule 38, the company will notify each QF project currently in the pricing queue for which a PPA has not been executed. There are new requirements based on the stipulation and new tariff provisions, and we will advise each QF where they are in the process and the timeline that they have to meet the next step in the process, or they will be removed from the pricing queue. One other item addressed in stipulation, in paragraph 26, the parties make it clear that no agreement has been reached on the company capacity contribution study, and that that issue will continue to be resolved pursuant to the original schedule in this docket. Lastly, paragraphs 27 through 34 of the stipulation contain the general terms and conditions. These are associated with most stipulations presented before this commission. They represent the obligations of the parties to the stipulation to each other. As with all stipulations, the agreement was reached through negotiation and compromise. Each party became comfortable with the agreement in a different way, and nothing shall be considered precedential in any future case. With that background, the company recommends the commission approve the stipulation and all its terms and conditions.
Mr. Clements, were you aware, or did you become aware of the action request that the commission issued to the Division of Public Utilities on May 19, 2015?
Yes, I am.
Can you please address the issues in that action request?
Yes, I will. And I will note that we've had some discussion with the parties to the stipulation on these issues, not in sufficient detail that I'm comfortable representing that our position is consistent with theirs. What I intend to do today is I will set forth the company's position on each of the issues in that action request and what the company would propose occur to resolve those issues, and then other parties can weigh in accordingly if they concur or have other ideas. The first issue raised in that action request relates to language that appears to have been excluded in the application section of the tariff. The question posed is why certain language approved in docket number 12035101 is absent from both the original and the revised Schedule 38 tariff. The excluded language appears to state that cogeneration facilities greater than 100,000 kilowatts seeking a term of 10 years or more must participate in a company competitive bidding process. The company was unable to determine why this language was not included in the original tariff. I recall our discussion around that topic and in that docket. It was an oversight by the company to not include that in the original tariff. That exclusion was certainly not intentional. The exclusion in the revised tariff was simply due to the fact that we were working from language in the original tariff. So again, the parties and the company in particular did not intend to exclude that in the original tariff and did not intend to exclude it in the revised tariff. We're not opposed to including that language in the revised tariff, and we feel that it is necessary given other statute in Utah that requires a competitive bid for a certain sized project. So the company would not oppose including in the application section the statement that cogeneration facilities greater than 100,000 kilowatts seeking a term of 10 years or more must participate in a company competitive bidding process or RFP. The second issue relates to the fact that the revised Schedule 38 or the proposed Schedule 38 refers to draft or proposed power purchase agreements somewhat interchangeably. That was not intentional. The company confirms that these words always mean the same thing as used in the tariff. and the company's not opposed to using one term consistently, and the term that it recommends be used is proposed. So the company would not be opposed to changing any place that it refers to a draft PPA to now read a proposed PPA. Issue 3 relates to a reference on sheet 38-2, item 5L. The reference to section IB-10 is correct in that section IB-10E sets forth the details of the term that is summarized by item 5L. And so the company does not believe that the reference is incorrect. However, a reference to section IB-6 may be useful as well, and the company is certainly not opposed to changing item 5L to include a reference to both section IB-10 and section IB-6. The company believes there may have just been some confusion as that section was reviewed. Issue 4 relates to the fact that some timelines in proposed Schedule 38 refer to certain triggering events happening within a period of months. The company, and it's our belief the parties, intended for months to mean calendar months, such that 2 months would mean May 26, 2015 to July 26, 2015. So anytime there's a reference to a number of months, if it's 3 months, it would be May 26, 2015 to August 26, 2015. So it would always be the next calendar month, the same day of that calendar month. And the company would be open to clarifying the tariff to explicitly state that in whatever manner is necessary. Issue 5 relates to the fact that several provisions of the proposed Schedule 38 provide a contact email address that's currently incomplete. For example, the email addresses are found in Section 1A, or IA, and on Sheet 38.4. The company has currently completed its work with its technical department to establish the email address and the various approvals that are needed for that, and to get it set up so that I can see that email address, as I'm the one who processes the QF request. And the company will include the email address in its filing of the final tariff following a commission decision on the stipulation. A typical course of action is once the company's tariff is approved, the company is directed to file a final version of that tariff. The company represents that final version will include the email address that is to be used in the tariff.
And does that address all of the action items in the action request, Mr. Clemens?
It does, and I'd be happy to, when we move to the panel discussion, address any of those in more detail as required.
Do you have any final comments for the Commission and the parties today?
Yes, I would like to make sure that the Commission is aware that this was a cooperative effort, and I'm very grateful to the parties for working together to reach agreement. Anytime you work through a tariff that is largely a process document, it can be a challenge as it includes many components. It took a lot of work by all parties to get here. There was very much a cooperative effort, and the company very much supports the stipulation. I believe it will make the QF contracting procedure and process much more efficient for both the company, for which I personally am grateful, and for QFs as well, and will lead to a better workflow for both parties. And I recommend that the Commission approve the stipulation with the modifications that I mentioned here in response to the DPU action request. And that concludes my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clemens. Mr. Jetter.
Thank you. Mr. Peterson, would you please state your name and occupation for the record?
Charles E. Peterson. I'm a technical consultant with the Division of Public Utilities.
Thank you. And have you had a chance to review the filing by the company and filings from other parties, as well as the stipulation and tariff sheets that have been filed as exhibits to the stipulation.
Yes, I have.
And have you prepared a brief statement you'd like to give today in favor of this stipulation?
Yes.
Please go ahead.
In the course of reviewing and recommending the approval of several past QF PPAs, the division became particularly concerned about two items in the process. First, the division learned that, for a number of reasons, there was a growing number of projects holding positions in the QF pricing queue. Pacific Corp operated this queue essentially on a first-come, first-served basis. The projects that entered the queue earlier would receive higher prices than those entering later. An earlier project could remain in the queue for months, holding on to its position and the higher price, even if that project was ultimately determined to not be viable. At the same time, it was possible that a project that could be viable and could be built quickly with a somewhat higher price would be effectively blocked by unviable and speculative projects that happened to have entered the queue earlier. The company appeared to have no clear procedure for removing projects from the queue in a reasonable time. The division believed that this situation was not in the public interest. The division wanted a clear procedure for keeping the queue cleaned up so that projects that would be actually built were given a better chance to move forward. Second, the division became concerned that even if a project were moved forward to the point of having the commission approve a PPA, ratepayers were sometimes possibly not being well protected either through terms of the contract allowing for what the division considered an excessively long time frame for project development and construction. There were two reasons, one or both could apply, that the division felt increased risk to ratepayers. One, the PPA prices could be significantly different from avoided cost pricing by the time the project came online, let alone at the end of the typical 20-year contract. And two, sometimes long time frames between the signing and approval of a PPA and the online date raised questions about whether the project could actually be built, all the while keeping its place. All the while the project keeping its place in the price queue and potentially blocking other prices. The division believes that the proposed Schedule 38 and stipulation mitigates the concerns that the division has had in that it puts specific structure around the amount of time a project can remain in the queue without certain milestones. Failure to reach those milestones, not due to Pacific Corp delays, would automatically remove the project from the queue. For example, with this proposal, under most circumstances, a project would be removed from the pricing queue if the PPA were not executed within 5 months of the project receiving indicative pricing. Furthermore, a project has to come online within 30 months of signing a PPA. And there are other milestones contemplated within the QF PPA, as Mr. Clements has elaborated on to some extent. The division believes and hopes that these and other terms in the proposed Schedule 38 will significantly reduce speculative projects holding positions in the pricing queue for lengthy time periods and generally move the projects along at a reasonable pace to completion. As Mr. Clements also pointed out, the proposed Schedule 38 does not necessarily contain everything the division believes it should have contained. However, as a whole, the division believes that it improves significantly on the current process and is just and reasonable in the public interest. Therefore, the division recommends that the commission approve the stipulation and the proposed Schedule 38 tariff as perhaps modified by the comments that Mr. Clements made related to the action request the commission recently issued to the division. I'll briefly review the action request points. For the most part, the division is supports what Mr. Clements said is the company position. The division has no problem with including the, in the application, the wording related to large QFs having in excess of 100 megawatt or kilowatts. No, I said it right the first time. In excess of 100 megawatts from being required to enter into a company RFP process, for example. So this language can and should be restored to the Schedule 38. Division supports amending the proposed Schedule 38 to include proposed instead of draft PPA consistently throughout the Schedule 38 document. The division does not seem, with respect to item three, the division does not see a need to change language on item 5.L on sheet 38.2. However, if the commission believes that it would be clarifying to include a reference to Schedule IB or Section IB6, the division would have no objection to that. The division understands and understood months to mean calendar months, as Mr. Clements clarified, and so we would also not oppose clarifying language consistent with that interpretation of the meaning of months if the commission believes that such language would be appropriate. And finally, the issue of the email contract addresses, that's been an ongoing question that the company has to deal with, and we hope that it will deal with it timely, as Mr. Clements suggested it would. That concludes my comments.
I have no further questions. So.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Vostag, would you state your name and your position for the record, please?
My name is Bela Vostag. I am a utility analyst employed by the Office of Consumer Services.
And did you have an opportunity to review the filings, the stipulation, and the other related materials and this docket for the purposes of this stipulation?
Yes.
And have you prepared a statement?
Yes.
Would you please put that in now?
Okay. I'll read my brief statement. The settlement stipulation before the commission today addresses two categories of issues regarding how Rocky Mountain Power develops power purchase agreements with qualifying facilities, or QFs. First category are issues related to the management of PPA milestones and the QF pricing queue. And then the second category addresses issues related to the review and implementation of changes to avoided cost modeling assumptions, which are used to develop PPA prices. The need to address these issues became apparent to the office over a period of time as the company was bringing increasing numbers of QF PPA contracts before the commission for approval. In particular, four wind QF PPAs came before the commission in 2013, and then six solar QF PPAs in 2014. Before 2013, there was very little activity from the company with respect to 20-year PPAs with QFs. And in addition, parties have raised concerns when the company has implemented changes to the modeling of avoided costs in some of its regular Schedule 37 and Schedule 38 pricing updates. Parties have questioned whether some of these modeling changes should have been vetted before the commission before they were implemented. I won't go into the details, but the office raised its concerns related to these issues in a series of comments on QF PPAs and the company's avoided cost update filings. We summarized our concerns from these cases in our October 31st, 2014 issues list, which was submitted in this current docket. As stated in that issues list, the office's goal at the beginning of this process was to work with parties to resolve these issues in a way that maintains ratepayer indifference towards QF PPAs, provides a comparable treatment to QF projects, and also does not result in undue barriers to QF development. The office believes that this stipulation resolves our issues while appropriately balancing these competing goals. I will just briefly state how the stipulation resolves our issues. On the issues related to the management of PPA milestones and QF pricing queue, A, PPA deadlines, the proposed tariff for Schedule 38 now contains several explicit deadlines, which if not met, results in the QF project being removed from the pricing queue. For example, one such deadline is that if a PPA is not executed within 5 months after a QF receives a draft PPA, then the QF is removed from the queue and the indicative pricing it has received is no longer valid. Such deadlines protect ratepayers as well as other QFs. For example, some QF projects which are not as viable and may be gaming the system will clog up the queue, resulting in lower pricing for potentially more viable projects that are lower in the queue. In the category B, the category of pricing updates, the stipulation includes a requirement that prices, which are often referred to as indicative prices, that are used in the PPA must be updated if more than 6 months old at the time the PPA is executed. C, under operation date, the stipulation includes a requirement that a QF scheduled commercial operation date cannot be more than 30 months after the date of the PPA execution. Under D, transmission interconnection, the stipulation includes a requirement that a QF must sign a transmission system impact study agreement within 120 days of receiving the commission. Receiving commission approval of its PPA. These were the four major areas that the office had concerns during past proceedings on PPAs. Now switching over to on issues related to the review and implementation of changes to avoided cost modeling assumptions, this stipulation identifies routine and non-routine changes to modeling assumptions. And it provides a process for having these changes reviewed by interested parties. Importantly, non-routine changes will not be automatically implemented by the company, but will be open to review and possible challenge by parties before implementation. The office also notes that this stipulation does not address one major issue that is part of this proceeding, and that's the company's capacity contribution study for wind and solar. This issue will continue on the commission schedule for testimony and hearing. The office believes that this settlement stipulation is just and reasonable in result and in the public interest. The office recommends that the commission approve it. With respect to the action request, the office just recently reviewed the commission's questions, and we agree with the company's proposal, though we would like an opportunity to review the specific issue on using the term proposed PPA in place of draft PPA, since we just learned of this change this morning, so we'd like an opportunity just to review that before agreeing to that specific item. That concludes my statement.
We have nothing further at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Bostock and Mr. Olson. Are there any questions for the witnesses?
Your Honor, just I think I may have misheard this, but in Mr. Clements's recitation of events leading up to this, I think he meant to make a reference to October 2014 and made a reference to October 2015 and subsequently went back to 2014. I may have misheard that, but if so, I think maybe the record could be easily corrected that way.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Anything else, Mr. Clements?
Well, I will confirm that I did intend to say 2014. I commend him for his diligence in listening to that exciting part of my testimony.
I hear every word, sir. I hear every word.
Any other questions or matters that council like to raise at this time?
Mr. Chairman, just briefly, or Mr. Commissioner, I guess, do we have a chairman?
Not that we know of.
So, Mr. Commissioner, just very briefly, I'd just like to point out that on Friday, on behalf of SunEdison, I filed some legal comments. And the comments may explain themselves adequately, but it came as a surprise to many of us in this group to learn that CivicCorps had language in the large generator interconnection agreements for QS that said that it was this commission and not FERC that had jurisdiction over those interconnection agreements, assuming all of the power was sold to CivicCorps. And initially I rejected that, and then I researched it and found out why they included it, because FERC has been saying that for years. It's just I didn't know it because I don't follow them closely enough. And because I, among others, have made statements before this commission that it's an exclusively FERC jurisdictional issue, that it's QF interconnections at a transmission level. And I learned I was wrong. I wanted to clarify that and put before the commission your lawyers, and I know you have lawyers who will be interested in understanding why this new Schedule 38 expressly says that this commission has jurisdiction over those QF interconnections. And as I explained in the comments, our view was because to this point, this commission, to my knowledge, has never ever been asked to exercise that jurisdiction, either in rulemaking or in approving an interconnection agreement for a QF, or in otherwise explaining the procedures that ought to be followed in obtaining a QF interconnection. The group decided to suggest to you that you simply adopt and implement the FERC OAT provisions that we've been following all along. So it wouldn't be a change. It would be following the exact same procedures that had been followed, but an acknowledgement that this commission has jurisdiction over those LGIAs to the extent, and if and when, it elects to exercise that jurisdiction. In my view, that could include complaints, if there were any, over the interconnection process for those kinds of QFs, or different procedures if you were so inclined to adopt them. But again, the group, I think, felt like the most prudent thing to do is to recommend to you that you simply adopt the FERC OAT procedures as your own for right now, unless and until you decide or someone asks you to decide that something ought to change. So I thought it was important to at least explain that for the benefit of you and your counsel. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dodds. It was helpful to receive your papers and it helped to eliminate some of our questions actually coming into the proceedings. Thank you for that. Do any of the council have any comment on the filing that Mr. Dodge just described and that was made late last week?
I have none, Your Honor.
I intend to take a recess until 10 o'clock. Are there any other matters when the commission comes back into session? We'll have some, probably very few questions for the panel, but Before we do that, we'll recess, but are there any other matters that the commission ought to consider while we're in recess?
Mr. Chairman, maybe I will raise this. I had intended to off the record, and maybe it's just because I only saw the action request for the first time this morning. And I'll be honest, it caught me by surprise, the language from the 2012 order about the 100 megawatt limit. And I guess my confusion, maybe it's more a question, given that QFs are limited by law to 80 megawatts, I'm confused why that language was necessary or there. And it's just I don't remember what led to it. But also it could lead to confusion that 100 megawatt QF for less than 10 years would follow these procedures. And again, my understanding is you're not a QF if you're more than 80 megawatts. So I guess I'm a little confused by that language, and I don't know if it's something you need to discuss or just I need to ask the parties, but if it's in there, I'd hate to have it confusing. And the way it reads in the action request confuses me because I don't understand the 100 megawatt reference.
I could provide some background on that, please, the commission.
Thank you.
So renewable qualifying facilities are limited to 80 megawatts. Non-renewable qualifying facilities are not. So combined heat and power applications would not be limited to the 80 megawatts under federal statute. We do have a Utah law that requires any significant resource acquisition by the company, and significance defined, I believe, as 100 megawatts in 10 years must be acquired through a request for proposal process. And so it's compliance with the Utah law, which you're familiar with, that prompted the change in the language here that would say if you're a combined heat and power QF and you exceed 100 megawatts, you would have to go through an RFP process instead of coming through the Schedule 38 process.
That's helpful, and that does trigger memory. I guess the one question is I thought we amended that law in Utah to 300 megawatts.
It was, I believe it's 300 megawatts for renewables. Still 100 megawatts for non-renewables. So that's the distinction.
Thank you. I appreciate you letting that clarify.
And again, clarifying, I believe we resolved that in the 2012 docket, and by oversight, the language was not included in Schedule 38.
Thank you. So the action request itself presents the language as the commission understands it to have been approved in our earlier orders. Were your comments, Mr. Clemens, to the effect that this is the language that would be used in the promulgated version of Schedule 38?
It would be the company's position that the language that we have in the revised Schedule 38 or the proposed Schedule 38, we would use that language because I believe we made some additional changes here and there that are minor in nature. My proposal would be we would simply include the two sentences, and I'll just read them for clarity. Cogeneration facilities greater than 100,000 kW seeking a term of 10 years or more must participate in a company competitive bidding process, RFP, and information on company RFPs can be found at, and that provides a web address. And so those two sentences would be added to the application section of the proposed tariff.
Thank you. And before we recess, Commissioner Lavar has a question.
Yes, thank you. I thought it might be good to ask this before the recess. And I'd be interested in hearing from all the parties their thoughts. And that this question presumes commission approval of the stipulation. But on paragraphs 18 through 23 that describe the process for routine and non-routine updates to Schedule 38, my question has two parts. It's whether those are provisions that should be incorporated into administrative rule by the commission if the commission approves the stip. And my two parts to that question, first, or whether these are the type of provisions that Section 201 of Utah's Administrative Rulemaking Act would require to be implemented into administrative rule, or aside from that, whether that would be something that would the parties feel would increase transparency on the issue. And I'd be glad to hear any party's thoughts on that issue now or after a brief recess. Since we're going to take one anyway, I thought I'd ask before.
I think at least from the division's perspective, I'd appreciate a couple minutes to speak with my client generally about this question during the recess, if that's...
So let's be in recess until 5 after the hour. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Parties before we continue with questions from the commission. Okay. Commissioner LaBarre, anything further?
Were there any thoughts on the question I asked before the break?
Yes, we discussed this while you were out, and I don't want to speak for all the parties, but I think our general consensus is that we view these the updates to the avoided cost modeling as being a issue specific to one company and not generally applicable to electric utilities. And for that reason, we don't think that the 63G3201 subsection 2C would likely require this to be a rule. And we think it would be appropriate to include these provisions that are in the stipulation in the order to give better public notice and also help remind the parties down the road that it'll be easier to find if it's in an order.
I'm sorry, could you just back up?
Sorry.
Easier to...
It'll be easier and more readily available in a commission order, I think, for parties who might not be present today to see and understand the updates and the agreement to the updates in the stipulation. And to be clear on the record, those are updates to inputs to the avoided cost model. I think that generally summarizes what we've discussed while you're out of the room, and that is the division's position on that matter.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Jetter. Anything on that specific subject, anything from any other council before?
The company agrees with that interpretation.
Pardon me?
Company agrees with the
Thank you. I just have a couple of questions as well, and then at least questions for the witnesses, and then questions of counsel about a couple of procedural items. First, if we look at page 38.1, and in particular paragraph 3, which discusses the interconnection process, it seemed to me and it seemed to the commission that it would be useful if there was a reference at that point to section 2B, where the interconnection process is described. So that it's certainly not an imperative thing, but we provide a lot of internal references in this section, this preface section, and that seems to me to be one that would be helpful. Mr. Clemens, would you have a comment about that, or do you have any objection to that?
No objection. I think that would be helpful as well.
And then just a thought about the links to the company's interconnection forms and agreements. As we tried to follow what's described on page 38.10, item B, second to get there. That is original sheet number 3810, item B. At the bottom of the page, there's a reference to the electronic location of the company's interconnection forms and agreements. And it's, at least to us, it seemed that we needed to go to the Oregon generation interconnection qualifying facility area of the company's information in order to find the forms that would be applicable in Utah. So I just ask that you check that out, Mr. Clements, and if there's a little bug in the system there, if you could repair that.
Okay, we received that directly from CIPCO Transmission, so we will go and confer with them. We certainly would like to fix that.
It might even be as simple as just deleting the word Oregon from the characterization of what forms are available at that location, so that it would just read generation interconnection qualifying facilities. Then just to, some feedback with regard to the concept of months as that term is used in Schedule 38. We think it would be helpful if there was some definition that's consistent with the one that you, Mr. Clements, described in your testimony. Would any of the parties object to that addition?
No objection to that from the division.
And I don't either. I guess the one question that arose in my mind is, but if it ended on, it was the 30th, and the 2 months hence was, or 31st, and 2 months hence only had 30 or 28, do we need to explain all that, or should we turn them all into 30-day periods? I don't mind either one. It's easier to think in terms of 6 months than 180 days, but it's more precise to talk in 180 days probably. So I guess I open that for your thought, or the commission's thought.
I think with that point being raised by Mr. Dodge, it probably would be best to include a definition that says whenever a month is used in the tariff, it intends to say 30 days. And then you can do the math from there. Since we've had issues in the past where a day matters in terms of timing, in an abundance of caution, I think it'd be worthwhile to have it to the exact day. So we would not be opposed to defining a month as used in this tariff to mean 30 days.
Thank you. I think that would be helpful. A question for the office. Mr. Bostock expressed the office's desire to examine the terms draft and proposed in more detail as they're used. I'm referring to item two of the action request that's been discussed earlier. We just are interested in procedurally how we would hear from the office on the office's, the conclusion of the office's review of that issue. Would you like to file something in a few days that expresses the office's position, or how do you intend to address that?
So, I think probably that would be the case. Commissioner, I think what we would propose is that if we had any objections, that we would file some appropriate document to make you aware of those, but otherwise we don't feel the need to comment if there's no comment necessary.
Okay, thank you. We'd expect you to do that in within the week, is that?
That's very hard.
Then okay. Finally, we've talked about some minor stylistic adjustments to the schedule that's incorporated into the settlement agreement. So as a matter of process, have council thought about how the commission would receive those and act on the settlement agreement as it's been proposed, but with the adjustments that have been discussed today?
Commissioner, I believe that Mr. Clemens addressed that, or I thought he did at the beginning when he gave his summary. And I believe that what he suggested was that just like in any other situation where we have some time for you to write your order and issue it, that you would write it accordingly with, you know, approve the stipulation with the edits that were agreed upon on the day of hearing, and then provide the company with 30 days, or I don't know if that's, is it 30 days? 30 days time to file the updated and corrected Schedule 38. I believe that's how you typically would do that, and the company's position is that we would agree to do that as well in this case.
Yeah, if I may add, what would be helpful would be to have a list of what those items were, just in an abundance of caution, so that the company makes sure that it addresses all the commission's desires in terms of the items that differ or in addition to the stipulation that were discussed at the hearing today.
Would you like that provided now or in a written form? It seems to me maybe what might be best is if we issue some kind of interim order, but I don't want to disturb the parties' agreements regarding the stipulation, and so that's our concern, is that I guess what I'm saying is we're interested if any party feels like the adjustments that we've discussed today in any way alter their agreement to the settlement agreement and the Mr. Jetter, any thoughts on that from the divisions?
Speaking for the division, I think we agree with everything that's been discussed today as far as edits to those tariff sheets, and maybe happy to proceed and however you would like to as far as getting those changed so that they accurately reflect what we've discussed today.
Mr. Olson.
On behalf of the office, I don't think the changes proposed, as we understand them here, do any violence to our agreement to the stipulation. So whatever is most convenient for the commission, I guess.
Okay. Anything from Ms. Hayes or Mr. Dodge?
No, I would say I agree. Paragraph 33 allows a party to withdraw if there's a material change in the commission's order from the stipulation. We don't view any of these as material.
That is Utah Clean Energy's position as well.
Okay. Perhaps then to just move the process along, let me try to summarize what I think we've done this morning in relation to adjustments. And I'm going to use the action request as a guide. First, we have the changes to the application paragraph that Mr. Clemens described, including that is adding the two sentences that he quoted to the paragraph that is in the proposed Schedule 38. Second, we have use of the term proposed in all instances where the terms draft or proposed are used in schedule Schedule 38 that's attached to the settlement agreement. Given the explanation of Section 1B10 and or the reference to Section 1B10 on sheet 38.2, I believe there won't be any adjustment necessary there. We've discussed conceptually a definition for the term months, and I think there's agreement on the concepts, and so we would expect the company to prepare a consistent definition and insert it at the appropriate place in the schedule. And the contact addresses are now complete, and now we'll expect to see them in the schedule. That is those email addresses that are listed that are incomplete in what was in the form of the schedule that was filed with the settlement agreement. And on page 38.1, item 3, that item would be followed by a reference to section 2B, where the interconnection process is described. Those are the changes as I've noted them.
That's, Mr. Commissioner, the link, making sure the link goes.
The link works, right. Thank you. Is there anything else? Let's be off the record for a moment. Just a hold.
Thank you
all very much for your participation today. We're adjourned.